This series contains adult language and depictions of graphic violence. Listener discretion is advised. Lewis Keller was born in 1857, a child of wealthy European immigrants who settled in New York City. His father was a successful attorney from Switzerland, and his mother was a French-born aristocrat from a family prominent in New York society. In his youth, Lewis was very aware that, although wealthy and incredibly privileged, his family was never allowed into the upper echelon of Manhattan's high society due to their Catholicism. It was a slight he felt deeply. To make up for this callous and rather rude ostracism, Lewis made the decision to write about that very society that refused his membership. He published articles in a periodical of his own creation called The Social Register. It was something of a precursor to modern-day social media. Like-minded people would check in to see what other people were doing with their time, their money, where they were eating, who they were dating, etc. It was an incredibly successful publication and acted as something of a salve for Lewis's hurt feelings. When his father died, Lewis was still basically a child of 17, and among his late father's estate was an expansive dairy farm in the rolling hills of northern New Jersey's Union County. As Lewis grew into an adult, he always kept his eye on where the interests of wealthy people seemed to be headed. And as the turn of the century approached, he realized that many had decided to take up the game of golf. So what did Lewis do? He closed down the dairy farm and transformed the land into the now world-famous Baltusrol Golf Club. The course has changed significantly over the years, with Lewis buying up more land in the early 1900s to add a second course after the U.S. Open was played there in 1915. The original course was bulldozed in favor of a new design to complement the second course that was built at the same time. Today, the two courses are known as the Upper and Lower. Beyond his fascination with high society, Lewis Keller was also a businessman. When the opportunity arose to purchase land bordering the golf course that contained high-quality basalt, an igneous rock formed when lava cools rapidly, crushed basalt is used as gravel, a primary component in road construction, which happened to be nearly ubiquitous in the greater New York area back then. Roads were getting paved just as quickly as they could be laid out. Lewis Keller turned that land into the Commonwealth Quarry and was soon connected to the Rahway Valley Railroad as one of its best customers. For more than 25 years, great machines cut into the mountain of rock in the Watchung Mountains, providing materials that helped build our country and also build Lewis Keller's wealth. He would sell the concern in the mid-1950s to the Hoodale Construction Materials Company, and the quarry would continue producing for an additional 20 years. By the 1970s, the landscape had been carved out, chasing the veins of the highest quality rock to the point where locals began to see familiar shapes in the mountainside. One shape in particular. In mid-September of 1972, a dog from the local Baltusrol Apartments was on his daily adventure through the woods of the Hoodale Quarry. This dog, a black lab mix, was known in the community as a lovable, friendly creature, always off-leash, never caused a problem, and could be counted on to alert neighbors to any potential stranger danger. So you can imagine the shock when this dog was observed by nearly everyone on his block, proudly trotting home with his unbelievable discovery clutched firmly in his mouth. A human arm. Welcome back to The Devil Within. You're listening to Justice for Jeanette. On August 7, 1972, Jeanette DePalma left her home in Springfield Township, Union County, New Jersey. She told her mother she was taking the train to her friend's house. What she really was about to do was hitchhike to her friend's house so she could save the train fare for something later. Maybe some beer, maybe a little weed, who knows? Back then, hitchhiking was a very popular way, if incredibly dangerous, but a very popular way for young people to get around. Jeanette had hitched rides all over the New York area and never had any issues. When she didn't show up at her friend's house and then never returned home that night, her parents filed a missing persons report with the Springfield Police Department. It was 6 weeks later when that friendly black lab returned home with a hand and forearm in his mouth. It was 6 weeks later when that friendly black lab returned home with a human forearm and hand in his mouth that prompted the search of the Hoodale Quarry. Later that day, human remains would be discovered at a very particular location within the quarry, one of those familiar landmarks created by the removal of tons of rock. The body, soon to be positively identified as Jeanette De Palma, was found at the base of a rock formation known locally as the Devil's Teeth. And along with the discovery of Jeanette, there came an ever-deepening mystery of who killed her and why. And the condition of her remains didn't help matters. It was reported that she was found under incredibly suspicious circumstances. Initial reports were that her body was surrounded by logs that formed a coffin shape. Within the boundary of that coffin were several, quote, occult objects, including pentagrams and crucifixes. There were also reported to be several dead animals hung from trees, some in glass jars, in the area immediately surrounding the body. Oh, and want to know how they found her? Police reports claim that arrows embedded in trees were found that pointed the way to the body. When these details were leaked to the press, it was quickly surmised that the death of Jeanette De Palma was definitely occult-inspired, probably satanic, and most likely a human sacrifice. It was now up to law enforcement to figure out the cause of death and begin to sift through the clues that seemed to point in a direction that no one in their department was familiar with. Devil worship. Okay, so cause of death for Jeanette De Palma. Remember, this was more than 50 years ago, and the body had been outside in the summer sun and heat for more than 6 weeks. And that's not to mention possible animal activity. And by animal activity, I mean she may have been a food source for scavenger animals in the area. All of this is to say that determining a cause of death was going to be difficult. The forensic team and medical examiners looked for the obvious signs first. Gunshots, stab wounds, water in the lungs, skull fractures, and they found exactly none of those. They were able to rule out drowning, traumatic injury, blood loss from stab wounds, organ damage from gunshots. In fact, from what they could observe, the remains were in relatively good shape. I mean, yes, she was dead and left to rot in the woods, but from a forensic point of view, there were no broken bones, her organs hadn't suffered any obvious trauma, she was still fully clothed, except for her sandals, which were found within a few feet of her body. So, what gives? They had to think about less traumatic, less post-mortem obvious manners of death. Drug overdose? Maybe. Although no paraphernalia were found on her, no drugs, nothing in the area that would suggest that. And she wasn't known to be a hard drug user, just some weed every now and then, according to her friends. The other possible cause of death that was proposed was strangulation. By the time the body was discovered, decomposition had prevented investigators from being able to clearly identify what would normally be obvious signs of strangulation, primarily ligature marks and bruising around the neck. So, death by drug overdose or strangulation? Two very different scenarios to consider. One could be accidental. Let's say some kids were having a party in the woods and Jeanette either agreed to experiment with some hard drugs and OD'd, maybe someone spiked her drink. Either way, she suddenly started having trouble. And kids being kids, everyone got scared and abandoned her. Now, yes, that would require a bunch of scared high school kids to keep their mouths shut about what happened, you know, forever. But I guess it's possible. Maybe she had a secret date with someone and decided to try some new drug and things went bad. That would only require the silence of one person, much more likely. Or maybe she just hitched a ride with the wrong guy, a scenario that became more likely as the investigation unfolded, but more on that later. For the time being, it seemed that the community, as well as law enforcement, was focusing on some level of connection to the occult as a primary factor in the death of Jeanette DePalma. Nearby Elizabeth, New Jersey newspaper, The Daily Journal, went to press with the following claim, quote, "Investigation into the death of 16-year-old Jeanette DePalma is focusing on elements of black witchcraft and Satan worship. A review of death scene photos, according to reports, is leading authorities to believe the girl's death may have been in the nature of a sacrifice. Pieces of wood, at first thought to be at the scene by chance, are now seen as symbols. One searcher said two pieces of wood were crossed on the ground over her head. More wood framed the body like a coffin. Another person who was there said, 'I guess if you were looking for signs, they were there.'" End quote. Police received many tips regarding an alleged coven called the Witches that operated in the dense forests of Union County. This group of occultists had been well known by locals and generally considered to be harmless. Just people playing dress up in the woods and rebelling against the hardline Catholicism that was, and is, so prevalent in the area. The rumors were that the Witches had decided to take their game to the next level and actually perform a human sacrifice sometime around Halloween. Their chosen manner of murder? Poisoning. So that could align with what investigators were dealing with. But the lead never panned out in any meaningful way. Another theory came to light, but was quickly dismissed by law enforcement as, quote, "too fringe to waste investigative hours on." The theory was that Jeanette was accidentally shot while walking through the woods near Hoodale Quarry. Who shot her? It was believed that she could have caught a stray bullet from the nearby Springfield Police Department shooting range. The theory's quick dismissal was, understandably, cause for some conspiracy claims from the citizens of Springfield, claims that gained traction in later years when the police department claimed that the case files for Jeanette DePalma's death, including crime scene photos and autopsy reports, were lost in the flooding that ravaged the area in 1999 due to Hurricane Floyd. These records were later found and turned over to journalists in compliance with the New Jersey Open Public Records Act and the Federal Freedom of Information Act. However, no evidence of a gunshot wound was ever mentioned. But the belief in a police cover-up persisted, and many are proponents of that theory to this day. Still, most of the community was sold on the idea that Satanism or witchcraft had something to do with Jeanette's murder. These claims were buttressed by local clergy, especially a man named Reverend Tate, the pastor from the Assemblies of God Evangelical Church, the congregation the DePalma family had recently joined after becoming, in their words, quote, "born again." Reverend Tate would rage against the occult, claiming that Jeanette would never be involved in any organization that didn't praise Jesus Christ, and in fact, she was probably killed while trying to convince her abusers that Satan and witchcraft had led them astray and that Jesus could be their salvation. Obviously, unless he was there at the time, Reverend Tate had no way of knowing what was going on in the hours and minutes before the death of Jeanette. But he apparently never missed an opportunity to proselytize. Quote, "I'm sure Jeanette herself was not involved in anything like that," Reverend Tate said. "But I know that many of the other young people in this area are involved. These kids tell us that when they're on drugs, they are being controlled by Satan. They do things they don't want to do, and they say things they don't want to say because of the power of evil." So, again, a connection between drug use and the occult. But as far as Jeanette was concerned, there wasn't any evidence that she was under the influence at the time of her death. The contents of her purse were nearby her body, in a pile on the ground. Just normal teenage girl stuff, lipstick and makeup, a comb, some personal items. Her purse, though, was missing, as well as the gold crucifix that she always wore around her neck. The missing crucifix was a main topic of debate as both sides of the argument used it in their favor. For people convinced it was the work of the devil, well, of course the crucifix would be taken as a trophy. For the rest, it was a simple kidnapping and robbery gone wrong, and the crucifix was taken because it was gold and probably worth a few bucks. In the decades after the death of Jeanette De Palma, a couple of intrepid amateur reporters from the popular local publication Weird New Jersey were able to get more information on the murder than anyone had ever gathered in one place. And although their entire brand is chasing ghosts, strange occurrences, and just weird shit that goes down in Jersey, they're also honest brokers when it comes to the truth. And their conclusion was that any connection between Jeanette's death and Satanism was basically bullshit. They were able to examine the actual crime scene photos and realized that all that stuff about her body being framed by a coffin-like structure of logs was bogus. Same for the claim that a bunch of dead animals were in the surrounding trees. The whispers of Jeanette's body being inside a pentagram drawn on the ground was also found to be erroneous. So the obvious question remains, who killed Jeanette De Palma? As the years passed and new generations of detectives populated the ranks of the Springfield Police Department, a new theory came to light, and it involved one of the most terrifying serial killers New Jersey ever produced, a man named Richard Cottingham. Cottingham, also known as the New York Ripper, and the way too accurate name, the Times Square Torso Killer, so named for the dismembered bodies he left in his wake back when Times Square was a real sewer. Cottingham was active from 1967 to 1980 and killed at least 18 young girls. He was convicted for 9 murders and confessed to the rest under no prosecution agreements. When he was arrested in 1980, investigators always thought he was good for more murders than he was confessing to. But he was already given life without parole, so they had no real leverage to get him to talk. But then, during a jailhouse interview with a journalist, one of many Cottingham had sat for, he confessed to what he called 80, quote, perfect murders of young women across the country. By perfect, he meant that he would change his MO so as not to give himself away and keep police guessing. Now, a statement like this coming from a serial killer can hardly be taken as gospel. Historically, serial killers stick to a pretty set routine: victim type, methodology for acquiring the victim, manner of death, and if postmortem mutilation is something they engage in, it's generally consistent across all victims. Rarely does a serial killer have the self-control to ignore an urge, especially after they've done it a few times. Could Cottingham have arranged perfect murders that would be impossible to connect to each other, let alone to him? Maybe. Unlikely, but maybe. Which leads us back to the case of Jeanette De Palma. The date of her death, August 1972, falls perfectly into Cottingham's active years. He was living in North Jersey at the time and claimed victims from both New York and New Jersey. He worked as a computer operator for a large insurance company and spent lots of time away from home, staying in seedy motels where he would take his victims. Now, there are some compelling reasons to at least entertain the idea that Cottingham is responsible for the death of Jeanette De Palma. She fit into his victim profile: young, attractive, and vulnerable. While he mostly targeted young women in bars or sex workers on the street, he claimed to have picked up hitchhikers as well. Hitchhikers in New Jersey, to be exact, on 3 separate occasions. Whatever the case may be, once he had his target, he would drug them, rendering them unconscious, and then he would do whatever he wanted once they were bound and gagged. If Cottingham picked up Jeanette while hitchhiking, he could have had the opportunity to drug her and take her into the woods. Maybe she suggested the detour if he made an offer of alcohol or drugs. Or maybe he just overpowered her. Cottingham's preferred method of killing was strangulation, which would also align with one of the most likely causes of death for Jeanette, according to the medical examiner. And finally, Cottingham always, always kept a souvenir of each of his victims, and his favorite was jewelry. But Cottingham stayed quiet about his other victims, and no solid connections has ever been made between him and Jeanette DePalma. And Jeanette's crucifix was not found among the effects of Richard Cottingham's apartment when it was searched. In fact, the only official suspect ever brought in for questioning in the death of Jeanette DePalma was a local homeless man known only as Red. Red worked on and off as a caddy at Baltusrol and lived on a self-made campsite in the Hoodale Quarry, not far from where Jeanette DePalma's body was found. Red was brought in without incident and questioned for hours. He was eventually released when it became clear to the Springfield Police Department that Red had nothing to do with the murder. Interestingly, Red disappeared the day after he was questioned by police and was never seen again. The murder of Jeanette DePalma remains unsolved despite more than 50 years of technological advancements in the field of forensics. In the aftermath of her death, the community of Springfield was torn apart, thrust into a state of near panic that Satanists were targeting their daughters, or that a coven of murderous witches existed just out of sight on the edge of town. Faith in local law enforcement took a hit with the allegations of a cover-up, and one of the most brutal serial killers America has produced is still believed by many to be responsible. We may never know the truth, and more than anyone, it's the DePalma family that suffers under the weight of the tragic loss of Jeanette. Thanks for listening. Make sure you're following The Devil Within wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. You can also check out our socials at The Devil Within Pod on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Until next time, stay safe out there.